Dear Jesus, thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for the gift of being parents. Thank you for all the kids who are represented in this room. And we just pray that you would give us wisdom, that you would help us to be wise, loving parents, and that our children would come to the saving knowledge of who you are. We also think of Eric and his family right now, that you would just bring them comfort, that you would be with them, that as his mother-in-law is nearing the end, that you would just continue to encourage them and that they would keep their eyes fixed on you. We ask all these things in your name. Amen. Okay, so if you don't know who I am, I'm Lexi. I am the TLC coordinator here, which is our special needs ministry for our birth through sixth graders. My background is in education. I was a special ed teacher. I was a general ed teacher. I worked closely with kids in foster care as a court-appointed special advocate. I've been a camp counselor and a director. I've done a lot of children's ministry. I homeschooled. This is my family. This is my husband, Caleb. He's actually the video guy here. That's my little brother, Robbie, who we've had for the last 3 years. And we just graduated him out of homeschooling high school. And it is possibly the greatest thing that's ever happened to me in my life thus far. I'm so glad it's over. It was great. I'm glad it's over. And then that's my little guy, JP. He'll be 2 in October, and then I'm due on Friday with a baby. So that is soon. Do you need something, Bob, or did you need
to? No, I'm spying on everybody.
Okay, I loved it. This is good, right? Okay. This recording stuff here is good?
Yeah, it's all
great. Okay, beautiful. Okay, so today's agenda, we're going to look at two questions that we are trying to answer. The first is, how can we be trustworthy adults in our children's lives, which includes our own kids, and also, you know, your kids are going to have friends, and you guys probably serve in other places, and things like that. So we're thinking about our own children, and then we're also thinking about just kids in general. And then how do we wisely and holistically care for our kids? And really, like I said, this is like a really big, we're going to like fly by a lot of things that you're like, maybe I want to know more about that, maybe I want to like think more about that. This fall we're doing an IBI out of this book, that's the 8 Errors Parents Make and How to Avoid Them. And this book, I don't think you're going to read it and be like, my parenting is revolutionized. Like, it's so, like, it is a lot of like just very simple, practical, biblical wisdom on how to raise your kids that you're like, I've heard this, I know this. But the point of the class is like, that we want to really tease out, like, okay, what does it actually look like to discipline your kids? What does it look like to do things well as toddlers, as grade schoolers, as teenagers? What do each of those, you know, diving into more of those. So I think if you were to get the book and read it, you'd be like, why are we reading? Like, it just, it's very basic. But I think as a class, it'll be good to lead discussion, go through more things, tease things out. So, yes. So this first question is, how can I be a trustworthy adult? So we think about like our relationship with Christ, right? First, we trust in Christ and his finished work on the cross. And then that leads us into a life of obedience. And so when we think about our relationships with our kids, they have to trust us first before they're going to obey. And so when we get really, really focused on obedience, and we aren't looking closely at like how is our relationship and building that trusting relationship with our kids going, we're going to miss the obedience. And it can lead to a lot of frustration and things like that in our parenting. And it's one of those things where the relationship that we build with our kids is it's their launching block for their relationship with Christ. So from our relationship, that is their basis of how they, relate to almost every other human in their life, and then it's also how they relate to God. So when we think God is perfectly trustworthy, he has done everything to perfectly be the trustworthy God that he is. He keeps all of his promises, he's infallible, all those things. We, however, are not. We are sinners who need grace, and we need Christ, and so when it comes to us being trustworthy, we kind of have to know, like, I'm going to do things that break trust with my child. I'm going to do things that break trust that we are going to have to overcome and repair. And so today we want to look at, if we want to be able to train up our kids in the way that they should go, if we want to be able to discipline them in the admonition of the Lord, then how do we build that trusting relationship so that that goes well? And why would we want to have a trusting relationship? The functions of that mean that we can solve puzzling behavior in our kids. Kids do weird stuff. Kids do sinful stuff. Like, we want to be able to address that from the basis of a trusting relationship, to teach them, to provide nurture and structure, to connect with them and then correct them, to deal with defiance, and then to support healthy brain chemistry, their development, being able to take care of them in their body, their brain. So hopefully that we can provide hope to children and the people who care for them, which is you guys, which we know that the ultimate hope is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that is what we want to provide to our kids, is that they would be constantly pointed to that hope. We want to care holistically for them, which means their heart, soul, mind, and strength. The Bible tells us, right, that we want to love God with our whole being, our heart, our soul, our mind, and our strength. So that means when we're training up our kids, we have to address those areas, because if we aren't looking at their heart, their soul, their mind, and their strength, we can't teach them to love Jesus with that as well. We want to be compassionate. Jesus had compassion on sinners. We can have compassion on our little sinners. And then to teach, connect, empower, and correct children. So, and you can look up the verses that goes along with those. Okay, so remember, we're flying by things, so we're going to keep moving through it. Just try to come with me and know that we'll talk more, yes.
We're not getting hard copy, but do we have access to this, like, online?
Yes, I can send this out somehow, I assume, Bob.
Yeah, when we post the audio in August, if I have PowerPoint, it would also be posted.
I will give that to Bob, and he will post it with audio. Yes.
But if you want Lexi to send it to you right away, give her your email.
Yes, give you, yeah, that would work. So, we're going to look at four parenting styles. The first one is authoritarian. So this means high structure, low nurture. And then we have the uninvolved, which is low structure, low nurture. And then permissive, which is high nurture, low structure. And then I'm going to give you spoilers, what we're going for is authoritative, which is high structure, high nurture. Okay? So when we look at these four parenting styles, when we kind of put it on a scale that looks like this, authoritarian and permissive are both based in fear. Authoritarian, you are afraid of the outcome of your child. You are trying to be God and get them to obey. You're fearful of, you know, things that go wrong. A lot of, like, bad parenting movements are built out of this, of, like, you know, the legalism of, like, if you do this and this and this, your kid will turn out like this. We know that's not how the gospel works. That's not how God, he doesn't say, if you do this, 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 and this, then this is the outcome. That's not how that works. And so when we look at authoritarian, it's quick to correct. It's harsh and swift punishment. And there is not a focus on building that trust and relationship. Over in permissive, it is also fear-focused, because you're afraid of your child. I think about parents who, like, when their kid is struggling and they are just, like, so afraid, like almost a victim of their child's behavior, and they don't know how to step into that leadership role or step into caring for their child because they're afraid to enforce boundaries and they're afraid of how their child's going to respond to them. And so what happens is that then the child doesn't trust you as the leading adult in their life. You can't be a firm foundation for them because you are leading out of fear instead of leading out of love and healthy boundaries and those kind of things. So this is cheap grace parenting. I'm just, you know, going to keep giving you grace and grace and grace and grace without any correction. So we don't want our parenting to be based in fear on either side. We want it to be based in trust and compassion, and where we have that high structure, high nurture. You're holding your boundaries, and you are loving your kids, and you are lovingly holding the boundaries for them, and you're connecting, you're bringing that connection between their heart and their mind. Heart, soul, mind, strength parenting is what we're going for here, where we care about all of those areas, but we're still providing the structure that our kids need. So, And then,
real quick, Lexi.
Yes.
I'm looking at that. You know, when I think about my relationship to God, mm-hmm. there is an aspect that I trust him fully because he's good, but there's also an aspect in which I fear him because I know that his discipline, you know, that he disciplines us as the son he loves.
Yes.
I'm not seeing that, though, in these slides, that with the authoritative perspective that there may be an aspect of fear, especially maybe a teenager who, you know, is sneaking out. Should there not be a fear?
Oh, that's that high structure. That's what we're going for there.
Okay.
Where the... You're building the structure for them that says, when you are sinning, when you need discipline, I'm going to discipline you.
Okay.
And that's where that structure.
So you just call it structure instead of fear. So you're saying,
yes.
There's a connection piece.
Yes.
Okay. So you're trying to have a positive.
Yeah, and where that it's your child, where it's you're not afraid. It's the fear here is talking more about you, because you don't want to be afraid of disciplining your kid, because then you're not going to do it. And so you as a parent don't lead out of fear. But as a child, they should know, like, when I do this, this is what's going to happen. And I don't want that consequence. And so I'm not going to do that. That is where, that's kind of the separation there.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for asking. So this is where you just take a minute. You can talk to each other. You can talk to the people you came with. What parenting styles did you grow up with? What did parenting look like for you? And then what do you tend towards? I'm going to tell you, I lean pretty authoritarian because that is, I mean, teachers in general, I feel like teacher personalities, that is really the tendency because you have 24 small children. Usually you're trying to wrangle. And so that is how I lean. I raised my teenage brother for the last 3 years. You can ask him about which parent between me and my husband is the one who would be more authoritative, and it would be me. And so, knowing that about myself, that's the kind of, I know I have to adjust to the other end. And so, yeah, take a minute. You can write. You can talk to each other. What
are you gonna put this? Yeah.
What parenting styles?
Just see where it has the description.
Oh yeah. Oh wait. Actually, I'll put this one up for you. There you go. This one's a little more detailed.
Oh, wow.
One. So. Okay, we're gonna keep moving. So, if you had a second to think about your parenting, how you were parented, those kind of things. So, obviously, uninvolved. This is kind of like where this is just neglect, where you're not, you know, you're dismissive, indifferent. There's no expectations. You don't supervise, and then. You're prioritizing your needs above your child's. This is where this goes into neglect. And then over here, right, we have authoritarian, where this is about control, where the relationship, there's not a lot of delight or joy or, you know, sweetness in a relationship like this. It is very much control, do your thing. That's what you're here to do. And then again, permissive, again, leans towards the more neglectful side, letting things go, the cheap grace. And then what we're going for here in the middle. Approachable, reasonable, flexible. You're directing the child's activities, behavior, and manner, but not in a way that is going to harm your relationship, in a way that is productive, but full of grace, but full of structure. And then where the child knows that they can, like, tell you things. When it talks about shared power here, it's talking about, like, your kids can come to you, they can make requests, you guys can discuss things, but they know that you have the final say. And they know that at the end of the day, my parents are the one leading and I'm the one following. And then parents have control, but it's not overly restrictive. And then reason as well as power to achieve parenting goals. So you have a direction that you're going and you're using reasoning and you're also using conversations, discussions, and your child's ability to advocate for themselves together to achieve the goals of. As Christians, right, we want them to be people who love Jesus and love others and are godly people. So, from a trusting relationship, what happens is your child is securely attached to you. So this is where I add some caveats here. Ideally, what happens from the ages of 0 to 3 is that a child forms a secure attachment to their parents from a parent who is consistently meeting their needs. When I say the word consistently, sometimes people are like, what is that mean? God is gracious, and like the research that's been done says that you have to meet like somewhere between 30-50% of your child's needs in order to form a secure attachment, which really I don't think is all that much. And so what happens from the ages of 0 to 3, what happens in a kid's brain is that they form the ability to trust because they have a caregiver who is feeding them and caring for them and loving them and comforting them when they cry and teaching them their ABCs and singing to them and all of that. All of those things form a secure attachment. So this is where I caveat with, if you have a child who has been adopted, if you have a child who's been in foster care, if you have a child who's experienced like they're put in the NICU for an extended period of time, they've had some medical trauma, they've had to have procedures, they've been in periods of stress and separation, it's not that they can't form a secure attachment, it's that you have these barriers now in addition to what you're trying to get out of the relationship. So if you have trauma, if you have the separation, if you have a child who's been adopted or in foster care, or they've just had a really like unstable home environment, those are additional barriers to being able to form a secure attachment. So, I'll leave that there. Ideally, from a secure attachment and a trusting relationship, this is what we want to see produced in our kids, which is self-efficacy, which is the belief that they can learn. If as parents, one of our chief responsibilities that the Bible gives us is to train and instruct our kids have to believe that they can learn. So if we are training and discipling them and they're like, I can't do this because I can't learn anything, and I'm, you know, whatever lies about themselves, about their ability to change their behavior or to obey you, then you can't. That's a barrier we have to get through. So to be able to disciple and teach them, we want that trusting relationship so they believe that they can actually learn what we're teaching them. Self-esteem, this is their beliefs about themselves. We want them to know the truth about themselves. We want them to know that they're made in the image of God, that God loves them enough to have sent his son to die on the cross for their sins. We want their self-esteem not rooted in like the world's, you know, like, you're a really good person because you are nice or whatever self-esteem looks like to the world. That's not what we're going for. We're going for the self-esteem that is rooted in biblical truth, which is so much richer anyway, understanding like you have a God who loves you, who knows the hairs on your head, who gave you your eye color, who is why you're interested in the things that you're interested in. That is the self-esteem that we want to be able to build into kids. Healthy emotional development. So like we look at like the fruits of the Spirit, we want kids who are self-controlled. We want kids who are able to express themselves in appropriate ways, who can communicate and things like that. And when we model that for them, when we're the secure base for them, then they can practice those things. Toddlers don't come out of the womb with emotional regulation. They have none of that. It is through modeling, teaching, and instruction that our kids move from the reactive, messy things that they are into being able to have, you know, communication, dialogue, coping skills, those kind of things, which we can teach them as parents. Self-regulation, kind of same thing there, where self-regulation doesn't just happen. Kids need a co-regulator. They need that adult with them, teaching them, modeling what that looks like. I wasn't raised in a Christian home. And two, I was raised by people with struggling with a lot of mental illness and addiction and all of those kind of things. And so they were not that secure base for me, but it ended up being people who loved Jesus that were. They were the ones who taught me how to, be able to communicate what I needed and be in healthy relationships and be able to like express what I was feeling and thinking in productive ways. It was their modeling that helped build a lot of these skills in me. So don't hear that like if you've messed up in like some point between 0 to 3 or like man, I think like, or you have a kid coming from a difficult situation that you can't build these things in them. You totally can. It is by the grace of God that we have any of this, but just know that from the secure attachment, that that can be built in different places to produce these skills. So, and last one, trust, the ability to be in trust in relationships at all, so that they have somebody to help teach these things and model these things.
Lexi, real quick. So yes. You talk about 0 to 3 years.
Yeah.
It's kind of that time. So I think about, you know, family. We have a lot of military families, a lot of families that travel a lot. Can you talk about that? If that mom is the stabilizing figure in the life and dad is like coming and going, mm-hmm. is that going to affect that child's relationship? Or I should say, will that affect that child's development over those 3 years? And is that something where, you know, you're gone and you can't, I know you said you can recover it. Is that something that mom as a center figure is going to cover down on, and that phone time or FaceTime is going to meet that child's needs? Or is that something that you guys have seen that when he's gone, it kind of creates a gap?
That's such a good question. I don't have a ton of experience with military families specifically, but from what I would say about the research, what matters is that they have one adult who they have practiced building that relationship with so that they can have that relationship with anybody else or other adults. Yes, Sarah.
Speaking as a military kid whose dad was gone on a regular basis, I'd say my mom was that stabilizing figure, but I never had an issue reestablishing that attachment with my dad. I was the daddy's girl of the family, so maybe I was a little unique, but I think my siblings would probably agree that my mom being that stabilizing figure for us made it that much easier when dad came back for him to kind of reintegrate and be like that additional stabilizing figure when he was there. And it wasn't that it impacted any of these like emotional development or something or other things when he was gone. It just meant that it was that much better when he was back.
Yeah. Yes, Carol.
I would assume that like a bad pattern would be like dad's gone a lot during those years, mm-hmm. but when he comes back, he's uninvolved.
Yes.
Because that would perpetuate detachment or like not having like a healthy, trusting relationship.
Yeah.
And that would be what I would see most often with adolescents, is if dad is like uninvolved when he's in the house, that doesn't yield trust between the two of them.
Yeah. So I feel like re-entry, how you come back, how the dad is involved while he's there, but then also the child having been able to practice and build that with somebody else so that it can transfer.
Yes. Lexi, you mentioned a lot about the 0 to 3 window. For those of us whose children are over the age of 3, mm-hmm. are we hopeless?
No. There is always hope because the gospel gives us that hope, and it is Christ who's going to do that work. The research is where it says 0 to 3 is when it's easiest, basically. Like, they just need you to like change their diapers and feed them and comfort them, and so it is basically easiest to build it then. And not that it's impossible, it's just that there's going to be additional barriers as they get older, their cognitive development, hormones, puberty. Like, when you start getting into that and your kids start to orient away from you in a lot of respects, you just lose that ability to come back to what could have been built. But it just means that you have to be a little more intentional. You have to increase your training and put in probably more time and energy into that relationship. And give them also other adults probably in their life to practice having trusting relationships with. So, always hope. Lots of hope. Okay. So, we think about what kids need to have that secure attachment. And we have to understand that that means that they're different from us. So child development gives us a lot of information on how kids are different than us, but so does the Bible. We know that children speak, they think, they reason in childish ways. They are not going, if you're trying to like have a like really intense dialogue with your two-year-old, they're not going to get that. That's not going to happen. They're not going to be able to speak and reason like you do. And so we have to expect that where our kids are developmentally has an impact on our ability to train and instruct them. So training and instruction is probably the thing that parents are most commanded to do for their children in the Bible. And we want to do that well. So the rest of this is going to really focus on how do we do that well? How do we train and instruct our kids in a way that is most beneficial to them? And this is where I also say that families are designed to belong to a family that is a mother and a father submitted to Christ. And so if one of those, any of those pieces are missing, if not submitted to Christ, not mom and dad, not, whether that's like trauma from adoption or foster care or whatever that may look like, or a marriage that is struggling or whatever, we have to usually address that first before we can really effectively train and instruct our kids. So we have to look at how's our relationship with the Lord, how's the relationship with our spouse, and from there, how do we train and instruct our children? So just some caveats put in there too. So when we look at our kiddos and what's happening with them, I find it helpful to look at the domains of development, because when we, this is parental problem solving. So when a problem pops up, I'm going, okay, is this a physical problem? Is this something cognitive with their education? Is it social emotional, or is this a spiritual issue? Rarely is it only one, and rarely is it never a spiritual component. And so there's usually lots of things happening at the same time. And but it's helpful to think through this lens of, okay, this is the problem I'm dealing with. Where is this coming from? What part of their development are we looking at? And we want to care holistically for our kids because that's how God designed them. You know, they have a body that needs to be taken care of. They have emotions that need to be addressed. We're meant to be in community. We're meant to be in fellowship. All of these things, we want to be able to speak into the lives of our kids. So if we're only focused on meeting their physical needs, but we don't care about their emotions, we're missing a part of where we need to be training and instructing our kids. Or if we're like really focused on how they feel all the time, and we're just trying to like keep them happy and care about their feelings, and we're ignoring being able to discipline and instruct them and give them, like challenge them educationally, those kind of things, because we're so focused on their feelings, we're also doing them a disservice. So we want to care holistically for them and think about all these different areas. And this is kind of the basis of this. You guys have probably heard of Maslow's hierarchy, right? You start with the bottom, you go up to self-actualization, all of that. I just kind of want to point out that kids need water. You have to water them. Because if they're dehydrated, they aren't going to care about what you're teaching them. If they aren't getting enough water, they aren't going to sleep well. Like those kind of things that all contribute to their ability to access the instruction that you're giving them. You have to feed them, and so many snacks, all this process. Also, can I tell you how much teenage boys eat? Like, we eat so much. When my brother goes away, it cuts my grocery bill in half the weeks that he's not with us. It's crazy. He eats so much food. I'm like, oh, wow. But they need that. So we keep feeding him. And it helps them to be able to be regulated enough to, again, access the instruction that you're giving them. And then movement. They need to move. This is also how kids learn. Kids learn while they're moving frequently. That is the best time to actually provide instruction, is when they're physically involved with what you're teaching them. So this is kind of the meat and potatoes of today, is that we want to be a detective of our kids. We want to be able to look at ourselves and say, okay, how are things with me and the Lord? How are things with me and my spouse? And how are things with me and my kids? And you're doing that self-reflection. And from there, you move past that into, okay, how is the trusting relationship that I've built with them? What are maybe some relational spots that I need to hit with them? And from there, we then go, okay, this, and when I'm talking about hot spots, I'm not talking about like things that like occasionally happen, like your kid's having a rough day and this pops up and you need to discipline that, or, you know, different things like that. I'm talking about like, you know, like this is something in your family that keeps coming up and it keeps causing the same problems, and you're just going like, and you're doing the same thing and you're trying to make this work and whatever. You try to pick a strategy and we're going, okay, this is not working. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a hotspot. There's going to be things that happen and you're like, today was a weird day and whatever. That's not this. That doesn't mean you need to like totally reanalyze yourself in your parenting. This is stuff that it's just like, man, like our family just cannot seem to get past X. So this is kind of, I told you, I'm a teacher. So you guys get graphic organizers is what you're about to see. So if I want to take a couple of these and pass them around. This is just kind of a good, the questions that I think through when I'm working with my own kids, when I was a teacher, I made a lot of behavior plans. I still make a lot of behavior plans, especially in TLC. I'm about to go on maternity leave, so my precious volunteers have gotten a lot of behavior plans from me lately. And so what happens is when I've identified a hot spot, this is kind of what I do. I think, okay, what is the problem? How can I categorize this? I really like frameworks. They're very helpful for me. They really help me think through things. And so I'm going, okay, what is this problem? Is it physical? Is it something like, you know, they're not eating well, they aren't sleeping well, they aren't drinking enough water, it like something like with their milestones, whatever. Is this a physical problem? Or is this a cognitive issue? Is this an educational issue? And this is where I'll quickly say, a lot of times when our kiddos are having what seems to be like they aren't thinking through things, it's usually deficits in their something called executive functioning. If you haven't heard of that, it's basically the way that our brains kind of like can operate, process information, inhibition control, our ability to plan, problem solve, all of those things. And those are all skills that kids have to be taught, and some kids have to be really explicitly taught. Like my precious brother, who has had a checklist of what to do. He's, you know, he's 18 years old now. I still have a little checklist for him in the morning of what he needs to do before he gets his day started and things like that, where sometimes kids just need it like really super direct for them. So that's cognitive ability. We'll look at them in a second, but just thinking through, cognitive isn't just like maybe how smart a kid is or whatever. There's a lot of skills that go along with that. Same thing with social emotional skills. There's a lot of skills that go with being able to be in community, to be in fellowship, to regulate your emotions, to communicate your emotions, to have good communication, all those things. There's a lot of skills that go with that. And then spiritual, we're looking at the truths of the Bible and what the Bible says about, okay, what kind of kiddo are we trying to produce here? And there is lots and lots of instruction on that. So we have a hotspot. We've said, okay, maybe it's physical, maybe it's more than one of these, whatever. And I'm asking myself, what is true? What do I know it's true about my kid? What do I know it's true about this problem? And then I'm asking myself, what truth does my child need? I want my instruction to be based in truth, not just like going back to the parenting style. It's not like I just want my kid to be happy, or I just want my kid to obey, or I just want my kid to, you know, leave me alone. Like, that's not what we want our problem solving to come out of. We want it to come out of what is true. And then, what am I going to do to train and reinforce what is true? And how do I point them to Jesus and keep building that trusting relationship in the process? And then if you go through that and like this is still a hot spot and you're going, okay, maybe is there somewhere that I need additional support to work through this problem? My additional support is a family that is the reason that we were able to raise a 15-year-old and graduate him out of homeschooling high school. They're the Mansfields. They are my heroes. And I would just call them a lot and be like, what do you do for teenagers? And then they would tell me and I would do it. So if you don't have other parents like that, you should find them who are a little ahead of you, have grown kids, whatever. Because that, I mean, that's what the body of Christ is for, is that we would have people that we can call on for that. Okay, so let's look at some hotspots. We have sibling rivalry, arguing, running out the door. All of these are real problems that I have either dealt with myself or had helped other kids deal with. So, running away from you, not responding to verbal commands, leaving the table during meals, leaving socks in the living room. That may be a real hot spot for me. Hoarding cups and plates in their room, not cleaning up after themselves. Do you see a trend? The cleanliness for teenage boys is something that I've worked through a lot. Lying, hitting, being late, or not doing things in a timely way, sneaking out, those kind of things. So, as you can see, these are probably like your 3-year-old probably isn't sneaking out of your house yet. At least I hope not. So there's a range of ages represented in these problems. So I am going to give you an example of how I would step through one of these, and then you're going to do one for yourself. But yes, so let's look at sibling arguing and bickering. What domain does this fall into? What do you guys think? What domain does this fall into?
Social.
Social. Yeah, our social. Probably a social issue of something's happening where we're missing skills and how to be in loving community with our siblings. And then it's spiritual because there's always going to be some kind of heart issue behind that. So this is just kind of like a bit of a brain dump. I'm not saying this is like what the goal of what's happening and asking these questions is that not that you would like get the perfect solution immediately. It's just to kind of like think through like what is true, what is the truth my kid needs, and what am I going to do about it? And so when I think about what's true is that God puts our unique families together, that we're all made in his image, and that as the parent, I'm responsible to train my kids how to be a godly brother and sister and how to be in fellowship in our family. And so from that, my kid needs to know that they were made in God's image and that their brother and sister is made in God's image. And then does anyone have their Bibles? I can look up Romans 12. 9 through 13, and read that.
Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality.
Beautiful. If our kids did that, wow, that would be incredible. So when I think about what does a kiddo need to know, they need to know that like one of the goals of our family is that we're going to outdo one another in showing honor. We're going to love each other so much that it's like a competition of who can love each other more. And so from that truth, I'm going to discuss with them. I'm going to model and we're going to role play. What does it actually look like to love each other and outdo one another in showing honor? And for little bitties, right, this looks like I'm probably going to share my toys with my siblings. I'm going to invite them into games with me and my friends. I am going to think about, I'm going to prefer them, and we're going to play what they want to play sometimes. And we're going to keep talking, what does it look like to prefer one another, to outdo one another in showing honor? And you're going to practice that. And you're going to just, anytime you catch them doing it, reward them in some way. Like, I want to talk about rewards and reinforcements. I don't know if we're going to have time, but just put that away. But then again, like for older kids, right, this probably looks like, you know, I am going to leave my siblings alone sometimes. I'm going to let them have some space. I am going to, you know, encourage them in their sports and their activities. I am going to be their number one cheerleader. I am going to be my siblings' biggest fan. And so being able to train and discuss this means we're thinking about our kids, where they're at, what they need, and individualizing it to them. And from there, I want to reward, like, if I'm saying in our family we value being each other's biggest cheerleaders. We value outdoing one another in honor. I'm going to praise that, and I'm going to affirm that for them. And like, for like little kids, like, you know, you can do cute things. Like, I have a little marble jar, and each time I catch you, like, loving your sibling well, we're gonna fill that marble jar up, and we're gonna go out for ice cream after we do that. I'm gonna tell you, as a teacher, as a special ed teacher, reward systems are like exhausting for me personally sometimes, and it can be hard to keep up with. But that's why I think that if we try to address too many things at once, rewarding and disciplining and consequences can be really, really overwhelming. But if we can really identify, like, this is the value I'm going to train in my family right now, and really focus and hone in on some of those things and kind of one at a time work through them, it becomes much less overwhelming. So if you're like, there's 10 things, there's 10 values that I really want to get into my kids that I want in our family, that's going to be too much. Narrowing it down and saying, like, I'm really going to train and focus on this, and we can keep building from there. Yes. So, and then how do I point them to Jesus and build our relationship as I train them? Maybe as a family, we memorize a verse about what we're talking on, memorize this Romans 12, 9 through 13, putting it where your kids can see it. And then I'm going to discipline, I'm going to correct them, I'm going to reteach them when they keep bickering or whatever, and then setting up related consequences. There is, there's this resource, they're called Family Teams. They have a lot of really good stuff on training your kids and consequences and things like that. They have, they talk about systems that they set up with rewards, and then they also have their consequence system. So, like, as kids get older, like, having a chore jar, like, I pull a chore jar, like, after I know my kid knows not to bicker with their siblings, we've trained it, they've mastered it, and now when I catch you bickering, you do a chore. And if I catch you bickering after that, the consequence escalates. So individualizing that for your kids and your family of knowing, this is a good way to reward my kids, this is a good way to discipline and give them consequences, can be really helpful. And then going from there, okay, I've done all this, we've trained it, we've discussed it, we've modeled it, we've reinforced it. This is a value of our family, and I still have a kiddo who's struggling with it. That's when you go, okay, where do I maybe start looking for some additional support for them or myself? So yes. This is where I'm going to give you guys some time to think through. We aren't going to talk about executive functioning, even though we want to. But you are going to go through this on your own. And whether you have a hot spot that you're thinking of right now, or maybe you need a hot spot to think through, and you can give me the answers that you come up with, that would be great. So I'm going to give you guys really probably the next 5-10 minutes and work through one of these with a friend that you're sitting next to.